Welcome to episode 46 of Mancy, a podcast about magic and its influence on our culture. In each set of episodes, we cover a different Mancy or method of magic. I'm RJ Walker. I'm a spoken word artist and writer. With me is my co-host, Elle.
I'm Elle Alder, a professional psychic and solitary eclectic witch.
Man, I wrote this late at night. Like, the script says Cho-host.
Cho-host,
So our last series was on Iluromancy, divination with cats. And there was actually quite a bit to talk about regarding cats. They're the famous familiars of witches, after all. They were used on ships to predict the weather. But dogs, on the other hand, are a little more practical than magical. However, there are several instances of magical dogs and legendary dogs, just not a lot of divination with dogs. Lately, though, that's not entirely true. We've seen a huge resurgence, in no small part thanks to a pug named Noodle.
Your words were not good.
I will say them again, and I will leave them in the podcast for posterity.
No, like, you...
I know what you're saying, and I know I was wrong. I'm leaving them in for posterity.
Okay, just checking.
Lately, though, we've seen a huge resurgence in magical dogs, thanks in no small part to a pug named Noodle.
Noodle!
I'll play a clip of Noodle's dad doing a reading. I sent this to Elle today regarding Noodle. This is the forecast from Noodle today.
Yet another round of Bones or No Bones, the game where we find out if my 13-year-old pug woke up with bones. And as a result, we'll find out what kind of day we're going to have. Now, today's a very special day for two reasons. The first is because Noodle woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning, sang me his little song. When I went to check on him, I noticed he had just finished peeing on my wool sweater and was already tucking himself into bed. And the second is because today is my birthday, Scorpio's Rise, and I like to think that Noodle left me the gift of clarity in having to throw away my wool sweater. Oh, and it's a Bones Day, you guys! Oh my god, it's a Bones Day. That's so exciting. Oh, I was hoping for a Bones Day. Okay. You know what that means? You got to treat yourself today. Buy the expensive pashmina. You have two in your shopping cart. One is cheaper and you're more inclined to buy it because it's cheaper. Don't. Get the expensive one. You want it more. Hang the pictures. They've been sitting on your floor forever. They're already in frames. Just hang them today. And even do something crazy. Oh my God, do something crazy like booking a skydiving appointment. Oh my God, don't do that. I can't imagine having to pay to jump out of a plane, but do something really fun. Treat yourself today. Have a great one.
So that is at John Graz on TikTok. That's J-O-N-G-R-A-Z. Give them a follow. Essentially, what's happening with Bones and No Bones is that Noodle is in his little doggy bed. John picks up Noodle, puts him on his feet. And if Noodle flops back down like a wet noodle.
It's so funny.
It's a No Bones day. But if he stands up, it's a Bones Day.
And it doesn't, I think, sound as exciting as it truly is to watch and see if it's Bones Day or not.
Yeah, so Noodle has millions of followers. So you probably already knew about Noodle, like likelihood that you did. But, you know, in the future, if people listen to this podcast, we need to capture this moment.
We have to make sure that everybody knows that this was a moment in which Canomancy was alive and well in 2021.
And, like, people straight up adjust their days based on the Noodle forecast. And what I love about Noodle is that if it's a Bones Day, you put energy into your day and do all the things that you love to do, go out of your way to have an adventure, like, treat yourself.
Was yesterday a Bones Day?
I'm not sure. I think it was a Bones Day.
You did have an adventure, though, yeah. So, you know.
We'll maybe talk about that. If it's a No Bones Day, you just stay home and relax.
Chill.
Either way, you treat yourself. That's the best part about the Noodle readings, is no matter what the reading is, you have to be kind to yourself. And I think that's the true lesson and moral that Noodle the Pug is trying to teach us. And I think that's very beautiful. So in honor of Noodle, we're doing a set of episodes on Canomancy, magic with dogs.
Thank you.
So canomancy is actually super rare. Noodle is by far the most widespread practice of canomancy in human history that I have found in all my research. But there's plenty more magic dogs throughout history besides Noodle. Some are holy. Some are infernal. But all of them are good boys. And I'm going to talk about a few notable ones.
Do you think Rocco's a good boy? Even though he's a hellhound?
Even though
he's
infernal.
A good boy. Yeah.
He's infernal for sure, though.
He definitely is unholy, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
So we're going to talk, in part one, I'm going to discuss some like real life notable dogs, that are magic or borderline magic or are suspected of being magic.
Okay.
And then in part two, we're going to talk more about like the infernal, like demonic folklore dogs.
Amazing.
So like good boys, part one, bad good boys in part two.
Naughty boys
part in part two.
Yeah. Rocco's a naughty boy.
Yeah, he's
sure.
a naughty
he's
boy.
He's naughty.
Yeah, El's dog is a hellhound for sure.
He just, like, Rocco is a perfect example of, like, I like to say that there's only so much good behavior in a day. Like, you wake up with, like, a bank of, like, good behavior, and, you know, sometimes you just run out of it. And, like, Rocco's bank is just a lot smaller than a lot of other people's bank of good behavior.
After this, we're going to be doing some divination with your dog, who is mm-hmm. most certainly an infernal being.
Most definitely the middle head of Cerberus.
Yeah.
For sure,
and
he is.
And you ordered a special fortune-telling toy for him.
I did.
That's like a dog toy that reads fortunes or something.
It's like a Zoltar machine, but for dog toys. Like, the dog toys, it's a stuffer is what it's called. And so you put the little fortunes inside of the Zoltar machine, and then the dog pulls them out. And so there's a really good example of Rocco doing this with squirrels that my mother bought him for Christmas last year. That there's like a little log. That
it's
had
a
like six
of squirrels.
And Rocco fucking ate them.
Literally.
He ate them all. Like,
literally, it looked like the fucking Jonestown massacre.
It straight up did. So it's that, but it's a Zoltar machine.
Okay.
So that's going to be one of the divinations we do.
Yeah, but that's still in the mail. So for this first one, we're just going to do traditional canomancy. You're just going to observe his behavior. We're going to take him to a place where
he's
never been, and we'll observe his behavior exploring the new environment. But there has to be nobody there because he does not play well with others.
Yeah.
All right. So for our first magic dog,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk about a saint.
Okay.
Saint Guinefort. Guinefort. It's French. I'm not.
How do you say? How do you spell it?
I didn't look at the IPA, but Guinefort. Guinefort.
Yeah, Guinefort.
Yeah, I'm calling him Guinefort.
Guinefort.
Guinefort. And he's an extra good doggy and
okay.
a worker of miracles.
Well, he's a saint.
Yeah. So he's from 13th century France.
What kind of dog is he?
I believe he's a greyhound. It didn't say what the breed was, but the pictures look like a greyhound. Like the carvings of him look like a greyhound. Like one of those run fast dogs. Those are greyhounds, right?
Yes.
Yes, the racing dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty sure it's a greyhound. Anyway.
What does it go fast dog?
He was also the faithful hound of a knight. I'll retell the legend. So there's this venerated knight who recently had a son by his wife. The wife died in childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
The saint left his infant son in the care of the dog while he went on his hunting trip. When he returned, the knight found the nursery that his infant son was in just a complete mess, in total disarray. The crib was knocked over, and it was empty. In the middle of the nursery was Guinefort, the dog, mouth dripping with blood.
Oh, my God.
In a rage, the knight drew his sword and cut off Guinefort's head.
Whoa.
Then he heard the cries of his baby son. The knight lifted the blanket to find the baby unharmed, along with a ravaged and mangled snake. Guinefort had saved the baby from the snake, and the knight had killed him for it. Overcome with grief at what he had done, The knight constructed a special grave and shrine for the good dog, Guinefort.
The boy.
Yeah.
Well, fuck that guy, though.
Yeah, he was like, so sad about it. But also, don't fly into a rage and kill dogs.
Yeah, like, I don't, yeah.
I guess, you know, when it's hard to confront that when, like, your son is dead and you're pretty sure it was the dog. But
I just think, like, a moment of hesitation.
Yeah.
You know, would have been appropriate.
Specifically, here's what the grave is. The knight dropped the dog's body and head down a well, then covered the well with stones. He planted trees around the well and then renovated the well into a shrine for Guinefort. Upon hearing the good deeds and tragic end of this dog, locals began leaving offerings at the shrine and petitioning the spirit of the dog to protect their children.
Aww.
In fact, it was believed that the dog himself was a saint, a patron saint for the protection of infants. It was even said that he could cure infants who were taken to the shrine if they were afflicted by a disease. Of course, the Catholic Church did not recognize Saint Guinefort. In fact,
dogs don't have souls.
There was considerable, like, effort to stop people from venerating this good dog. And it's mostly believed that Saint Guinefort had, like, a cult following. They were like, you're not a real saint. This is just, like, a cult of people who like this dog.
That's how Santa Morte is, too. That same thing. It's very weird. Like, yeah.
Yeah, even with repeated prohibitions from the Catholic Church and people, like, literally
don't give a fuck.
Threatened to be excommunicated and, like, all the shit, people would regularly leave offerings until 1930. So from the fucking 1300s to 1930.
So what is it with – because if you remember in my Halloween episode, a lot of the things that were celebrated along with, like, the All Hallowtide existed until the 1930s as well.
I'm wondering if the Depression and the World Wars, like, really shook people.
Well, I think that there was probably – yes, probably that. And I think a transition from, like, religious leaders being kind of the main leaders into, like, individual country leaders mm-hmm. because of the World War.
There's less
maybe.
Power from the church.
Yeah, so then people kind of transitioned.
Yeah, and people looking for alternative beliefs at a much more heightened rate in response to, like, world strife.
A lot
strife.
Of the, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Even after all the controversy, Saint Guinefort remains as an icon for magic dogs everywhere.
Yeah.
What do you think about Saint Guinefort?
Oh, good boy.
Yeah, would you leave an offering to Saint Guinefort?
Oh yeah, I actually would love to go see.
Leave
his
him a
shrine.
Bully stick.
I would absolutely like one of the thickest bully sticks. Bully sticks are Rocco's favorite treat.
Yeah, they're bull penises. If you don't know, they're dried bull penis.
Yes, and
penai.
I used to work for like a local kind of organic crunchy granola dog food shop. And when I first worked there, one day we got shipment in and they were like, hey, can you go in the back and count the bully sticks? And I was like, sure. And I was counting them and I had like, I think it was like 100 in this order. And they were very long and really stretched thin. And I was like, okay, there's 100 bully sticks or something like that. And they were like, do you know what a bully stick is? And I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, oh, well, that's a bull penis. And I was like,
it's nice and stretched.
Yeah. And those are Rocco's most favorite treats, for sure.
Yeah, he likes the dick.
Mm-hmm.
but that's not the only doggy saint. Just as there were cat-headed gods, there are dog-headed saints. Well, there's one dog-headed saint. Saint Christopher. He was a Christian martyr in the early days of Christianity. It is said that he was a traveler and once came upon a child at a river crossing. St. Christopher helped the child cross the river, even though he did not know this child, just a random fucking kid. And it came at the cost of his travel supplies. The child was heavy as lead, and getting him to the other side, like, was really hard. And this, like, heavy child, he's, like, hefting him across the river. And as he's doing, after he does this, St. Christopher says, "You put me in great peril. The whole world could not feel as heavy on my shoulders as you." And the child replied, "You carried not only the world, but him who made it," revealing himself to be the Christ child. He blessed Saint Christopher and vanished. Thus, St. Christopher is the patron saint of travelers and the safety of children, like St. Guinefort, which is why a lot of people suspect he's depicted with a dog head as like a sort of subtle call to St. Guinefort, even if in not a lot of canon he has the dog head.
I feel like I've seen that before.
Yeah. Another theory as to why he has the head of a dog is that he's a replacement for depictions of Anubis, who had the head of a jackal.
Yeah.
But yeah, patron saint of travelers has a dog head.
I dig that.
Yeah.
Is it Tucker?
Tucker?
The dog from the RV.
The dog from the RV place. No, it's a greyhound, actually. It looks like a greyhound. But also, like, can you really trust medieval fucking drawings? Because...
No, you can't.
What even?
What? So I, in my brain, I am seeing or, like, being reminded of a saint that has, like, a Saint Bernard head on a human body. What is that?
That I don't know. That might be Saint Christopher. But... I was going to bring up St. Bernard's, but they're not particularly magic, so I didn't. But here is St. Christopher. And yeah, he kind of looks like Anubis. But look at how derpy the drawing of this dog is.
Yeah, art was not good in medieval times.
Yeah, outside of stained glass, we're not really killing it.
Yeah, they did not, no.
Yeah, but... St. Bernards were actually brought up by a group of monks at like the monastery called St. Bernard Monastery or something like that.
Oh,
and
okay.
It was these monks that trained them to rescue people from the snow. Mm. And it was then that their name was changed to the St. Bernard once they were employed as rescue dogs by these monks.
Oh.
Before that, they were called like the Mountain Shepherd or something like that. But
okay,
yeah, that's where Saint Bernards are. On to the next magic dog. I'm sure you're very familiar with this one, L. It's on the Zeroeth tarot card in the Major Arcana,
mm-hmm.
The Fool.
Mm-hmm.
Can you briefly go over what the dog symbolizes on the tarot card?
Yeah. So the Fool, as a tarot card itself, is card number 0. Because it represents, like, the infinite potential of life. It's 0 like an egg, which is, the beginning of a life. And the idea of this card is that you're kind of heading off into this new journey. It has a dog depicted next to the traveler, next to the fool, because the dog represents our spirit guides being with us and, like, walking alongside us and protecting us in that journey into the future.
Hmm. Now, this symbolism is represented in pop culture as well. Jake the dog from Adventure Time is a subtle nod to the dog on the Fool card, with Finn being the fool.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of Adventure Time actually calls to epic poetry. And the Fool's Journey is kind of a pictographic form of epic poetry.
Yeah.
In JoJo's Bizarre Adventure... One day I will show you just one episode of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it.
It'll make you fucking throw up. Like, it is so cringe and campy. I think JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is bad, and I get a lot of hate from anime fans for that opinion, because it's like a cult favorite.
Okay.
It's like so bad that it's a meme. Like, it's campy to the maximum.
Okay.
Like, all the characters are named after, like, classic rock bands.
Oh.
Like, there's just a character named Speedwagon after Mario Speedwagon, and he's like a supporting character. And like, there's a villain named ACDC, spelled ASIDSI.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
And of course, the big bad is Dio.
Yeah.
Ronnie James Dio. It's like so cringe and bad. And like the animation is so over the top where sometimes I'm like, is this bad on purpose?
Right.
Or is it, how self-aware is the show? And
right.
I think it was serious at first and then later understood how campy it was and leaned into that. But so in one of the main arcs of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, everybody's favorite arc, characters have what are called stands, which are like spirit guides that are attached to them that can like affect the world in specific ways.
Okay.
And they're trying to travel around the world and find the different stand users. JoJo's stand is the star.
Okay.
Dio's stand is the world. The Fool's stand, belongs to literally a Boston Terrier. Literally, it's a dog that has the fool stand. And he's literally Rocco. He's just a little shit, black little dog that fucking just causes trouble and is annoying.
I swear to God, Rocco cannot be an actual dog. Like, he's just, like, a tiny goblin.
I mean, your dog 100% is a JoJo character.
Yeah, like, he's not a real animal, for sure.
Now, I didn't find much on the subject of canomancy specifically because it isn't really the most popular branch of theriomancy, which is animal divination. But
I wonder why.
I have more notable dogs in history. And I think it's because dogs were utilitarian.
I feel like dogs are not really looked at to be like wise. They're more like companions.
Yeah.
But I don't look at a chicken and I'm like, look at this chicken that knows what the fuck is up, you know? And yet we have, although maybe it's because of like triomancy is like weird.
Dogs are also kind of predictable. Right, where cats aren't super predictable, they kind of like have their independence. Chickens are just dumb, and so we'll do whatever. And there's no real controlling them. Dogs are 100% like utilitarian like animals for like a companionship, but also for like work purposes, like hunting and various other uses. And so for them, it wasn't magic; it was just utilizing a tool.
Okay.
So I think that's where it is. However, dogs do have the same value to theriomancy that other animals do, like they know things we don't know, which is why I am including these next dogs, which are sort of magic, but more they're just notable in history.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So Freud.
Okay.
Freud had a dog named Yofi, J-O-F-I.
Yofi.
Yofi, which sounds like cute. What a dog would say.
Yeah.
Freud believed that dogs had the uncanny ability to read people in a way that humans can't. He also believed that dogs had a calming effect that could help people emotionally regulate. He performed a study where he put several subjects in three conditions. One where a dog was nearby, one where they were instructed to think about a dog, and one where there was no dog. The subjects then would undergo a stressful cognitive conversation and have their blood pressure measured. Okay. So they would undergo like traumatic like dialectic therapy. As expected, the subjects in the dog groups did better than the subjects with no dog influence. Their blood pressure didn't go up as much
with the dog.
Yeah.
Good.
When it came to reading people, Freud would use his dog Yofi to judge their emotional state. If Yofi was near the patient and lying down, then the patient was calm. If Yofi was on the other side of the room, then the patient was honest or distressed. Yofi would also alert Freud when sessions were over, moving to the door at the 50-minute mark.
He'd be like, hello, we are done. Dad, like, I don't want to hear his shit anymore.
Yeah, he just had like an internal clock. Freud described Yofi thusly. A calming creature, so interesting in her feminine characteristics.
Oh, it's a girl.
Too wild, impulsive, intelligent, and yet not so dependent as dogs often are. I imagine...
Maybe Rocco is Yofi incarnate.
Maybe. But you couldn't really put him in a room with your clients, could you?
That feels like a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah. your dog does read people, and he reads all of them as
bad.
The enemy.
Yeah. He reads people, and then he's like, well, I know that I can't trust you, so we'll start there, and then you can earn my trust. That's what he does.
Yeah. I imagine Freud speaks like Werner Herzog.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Next, I want to talk about the hero of the North.
The hero of the North.
Balto. Balto the sled dog. And Elle admitted that she has not seen the 1995 animated film Balto.
I feel like maybe I have, but probably, I don't know.
It's so good. Like if you haven't seen it, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, go watch it. It is one of the better animated movies from the 90s. Like the 90s had a whole bunch of killer animated movies and a whole bunch of trash ones. Balto is one of the banging ones. I absolutely loved it. I think Balto's story is especially relevant to the times we live in today.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 1925, Alaska, I'm going to like tell the story. In 1925, in Alaska, doctors were aware of the diphtheria epidemic sweeping through the town of Nome, Alaska.
Nome has had some shit.
Yeah. Particularly impacting kids and young people. Fortunately, a vaccine for diphtheria had been created, or rather, a serum containing diphtheria antibodies that could be used to treat patients who had caught diphtheria. One problem, though. The only serum that could be used to stop the outbreak in Nome was in Anchorage, and freezing temperatures and winter storms had made planes unusable. The only way to get the serum to Nome in time to save the afflicted kids and prevent a pandemic in the town was via dog sled. It was a relay of various dog sleds with the serum passed off like a baton.
How far is Nome from Anchorage?
Hundreds of miles.
How far?
I'm going to try to find the my internet's kind of spotty, but if you want to look up the serum run on your phone and tell us. But I know that it is several hundred miles, maybe almost 1,000.
I mostly just wanted to be like, you literally just Googled that.
Literally just Googled
you
that.
You literally just Googled that. How long can a single dog team run? Like 100 miles, I want to say? Probably. Like 50.
Is that your estimate, 100 miles?
I want to say 100.
Okay. We'll keep that estimate in mind as we talk about this story. Because the story
That's
is
wrong.
Fucking wild.
That's wrong, right?
It's not wrong. It's not right. But it's not wrong. Because it depends on the team.
Yeah. Because I feel like some teams, like 18 miles, they're like, woo.
Yeah.
And but like yeah, and there's a lot of things that happen. I'm like very into dog racing or like dog sledding in a very weird way.
What? I never knew this was like a niche interest of yours.
Because of watching Life Below Zero.
What's that? Is that just some trash television I've never heard of?
It's from National Geographic. It's on Disney Plus. And it's just about people who live like in the Arctic, above the Arctic Circle, like in Canada, Alaska, etc. And there are some people who do like dog sledding that like talked about it a lot.
So I Googled it. I found it. The route for this relay was 674 miles.
Jesus, that's a long way. That's a long way in a car.
Yeah.
That's probably like, I'm going to say like 12 hours of driving.
Yeah, it's gnarly. I don't know.
And not through the fucking winter tundra. Like.
So the Iditarod race, it's almost like an honor of that. So they use a lot of the same route for the Iditarod dog sled race. But yeah, this is some shit.
Okay.
This story is super cool and definitely worth making an animated movie about.
Okay.
Although they got so many details wrong.
Okay.
So Balto. There's like a statue of Balto, like in Anchorage and in Nome and at like a fucking zoo, I think, somewhere.
Okay.
Like Balto is like the hero.
Yeah.
Right. So Balto led the sled manned by Gunnar Kassen, a master musher from Norway. They faced harsh storms and brutal February weather. So this is Alaska in February.
Yeah.
Like not a good time.
No.
But they made it to Nome, Alaska in time to deliver the serum. Balto and Kassen were praised as heroes, and the news spread all over North America about the brave dog who delivered the medicine to the sick. He was in all the papers all over the country. And I'm telling you all that Balto did not do all of that for you to continue to not be vaccinated. Balto says get vaccinated.
Balto does say get vaccinated.
Yeah. Of course, that is the legend of Balto.
I was going to say, Balto did not do that on his own.
That is the legend of Balto, right? Not quite the reality. Like I've mentioned before on this show, we tend to think of history as like the works of great men, but in this case, a great dog. But that is seldom the truth. History is a culmination of efforts of many people pushing society and culture in a particular direction collectively. Balto absolutely contributed to the 1925 serum run. And but there's a dispute as to whether or not Balto was even the lead dog in his team. Or was the lead dog on Cass and Sled. It's more likely that a dog named Fox was the lead dog, but it was also probably co-led by Balto and Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Balto...
They have to switch them out. Like, they really can't run that long in the lead. Anyway.
Balto is just a better sounding name for the newspapers than Fox.
Than Fox.
Yeah.
Foxy.
Yeah, Balto sounds like a heroic name.
Yeah, Balto so, is
it sounds very Alaskan sounding, too. And also, like, in the animated film, he's, like, part wolf dog, so people hate him.
Oh, yeah. Okay, no, I have seen this. I feel like I saw this in theaters, even. I just was,
wow, in 95? You had to be, like, two.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jesus. How do you have memories from being two?
Honestly, I don't have that many childhood memories, but I distinctly remember watching this movie in the theater because I loved it. Because it was dogs.
It's Balto.
I love dogs.
Dude, this movie is lit. aside from that, though... Cassin and Balto didn't even complete the most difficult leg of the run. In fact, they had a pretty cushy leg compared to everybody else. Balto wasn't even Cassin's dog.
Oh, my God.
Balto actually belonged to Leonard Cipolla. Cassin's whole team did. Actually, the longest and most dangerous leg of the journey was undergone by Leonard Cipolla himself. He was just the goat when it came to dog sled racing.
Yeah.
Cassin was a family friend. And so he was like, here, you can have this team. This is important that we get the serum there in time.
Yeah, of course.
And Cassin's lead dog was named Togo. Togo is actually the fucking goat.
Yeah?
Yeah. Togo is crazy. So this is a biography of Togo.
Togo.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Togo is the real hero of this race, like indisputably. Like anybody who knows the facts knows that Togo is the greatest.
You literally just Googled that.
I literally just Googled that, but it's true, and you can literally just Google it too. Okay, before we continue with Togo's biography, I guess we have to explain why Elle is taunting me in this way. Get the singing bowl ready for this tangent. So I'm in my writing poetry class.
Okay, no, like I feel like, so RJ is getting his undergrad right now. RJ is also 30.
Yeah.
Which is not his fault in any way, shape, or form, but we're fucking doing it. RJ is really just trying to get through college. I did college in a very non-traditional way. I never got my bachelor's, so like, fuck it. Like, we don't need those things, but... If you know, you know. Like, if you've ever been 24 sitting in a college class with a bunch of fucking 18-year-olds, you know. Like, you know that feeling. So RJ just is like, I don't know why, like, I don't have any friends, and no one wants to be my friend, and nobody in my poetry class likes me.
I know why nobody likes me.
And, like, this fucking summer, one of RJ's fucking professors sent him an email with, like, a YouTube link to one of his poems and was like, RJ, this is, what do you say, marvelous? Phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
This is phenomenal. And so, like, of course, that's why people don't like you, because you're, like, this 30-year-old, and people don't understand, like, how the world works and, like, ways in which you become just really fucking grumpy as you get older, and you're like, I'm just trying to get this fucking piece of paper so I can fucking get a house someday. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
And kids suck. Anyway, RJ has like a complex about, one, people not liking him, and two, specifically his classmates not liking him. So today he like walked in the office when we were getting ready to record, and he was like, well, I have confirmation that my class hates me. And I was like, yeah? And he was like, yeah, they do. They hate me. So now you can say.
Yes. I mean, it's my writing poetry class, and I have, like, I have a published
I'm
book.
I'm the sixth best poet in the world year.
I've done things with poetry for 10 years. Like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah.
I can at least confident, like, I have very low self-confidence, but I can at least say I'm confident in that department.
Yeah, like, you can write a good poem.
I get one thing.
Yeah.
Please.
No, you do it exceptionally well, for sure. I would be hella fucking intimidated, but I know you. No, I am still intimidated by your poetry, but I still know you, so, like, you know,
so,
I'm saying.
We're talking about children's poetry in the class, and this is not a place where I excel.
What?
I cannot write for children. So
RJ's like consistent feedback is like maybe less swear words.
So we're challenged to co-write limericks, and I'm like, oh, sweet, collaborative writing. That's really cool. And I'm with this I'm forcibly partnered with this person by my professor because nobody wants to be my partner ever. We write the limerick based on some AI-generated fish names from the AI weirdness site we talk about in the Cybermancy episode.
Yeah.
The professor went on and found some dumb-sounding fish names.
Like you do. What else is the internet for, though?
And I wrote mine, and with this person, she thought of all the rhymes, and I filled in the blanks, and like, they were very adult, and I'm like, it's fine. You know, limericks are kind of supposed to be a little raunchy. You know, they're supposed to be a little edgy and crass.
Yeah.
And she was like, you just have an opinion about everything. And I'm like,
I do have too many opinions.
I'm sorry. And then
I never learned how to not say them all the time.
And then the professor told the story about these two kids were talking to each other, and one of them said, last night, I peeked and saw that my dad was switching out my tooth for money. And the other kid says, oh, wow, your dad is the tooth fairy? And the professor was like, this is an example of like how children think and like why this should be in children's poems. And I was like, where have I heard this concept before? Oh, when I was researching psychology and studying psychology. And I was like, what is this called? It's called inductive reasoning. And I Googled it to confirm that, like, that's what I was talking about. Like, so I said the right thing.
Yeah.
And the professor was like, I was like, this sounds like inductive reasoning. And the professor was like, well, if you could please explain to everybody what that is. And it was pulled up on my computer, and I looked at it, and I'm like, well, it's when you see a whole bunch of evidence and then you come to a conclusion rather than like positing a theory and seeing if the evidence fits and coming to a conclusion. That's deductive reasoning. Inductive reasoning is based on a lot of assumptions, and that's what kids do. And the girl who was partnered with me turns and says, you literally just Googled that.
You know, this bitch, I've decided, does not like click on the words that she doesn't know on her Kindle. She just keeps reading. She never Googles anything. She doesn't use the dictionary to look things up.
I'm a rabbit holer, right? So I like to I like to go down the rabbit hole. Like when I make a connection, I'm like in the computer, like looking it up and doing all the research and trying to make sure I'm saying the right thing. And sometimes I even get it wrong and have to make corrections, but like, yeah, so Elle is now making fun of me. You literally just Googled
you
that.
You literally just Googled
anytime
that.
Anytime
and then the
I know something.
And the whole class laughed.
Yeah, the whole class laughed at me. And they were like, yeah, he's not smart at all. He just Googles things. But
okay,
like,
but
how
like,
did I know what to Google?
Yeah,
how did
what
I know
the fuck? You guys, what do you fucking do? How do you learn anything?
There's
Google Scholar.
I'm just trying to like confirm that I know the right thing because I'm wrong all the time. I'm sorry. God damn it.
It's just fucking, I remember when I was finishing my associates, I think I was 24 and I just fucking wanted my degree. Like I was like, I just want to fucking finish my three classes, get my fucking associates and be done with it. And I just like, I kept getting put in stupid fucking groups with like, and this is a, you know, college. It's a state college. It's 2-year college. And I just did all of my work, like, for all of the groups. And everyone was like, whoa, do you want us to help? And I was like, no, I want a fucking A. I don't want you to help. I want to do it. I want to get an A. I will put your fucking names on it. I don't care. And I just feel like nobody understands how fucking painful it is to be that old and be like, I still fucking hate you guys. Like, it's, anyway. Yeah.
Anyway, that's a new phrase for the podcast.
You literally just Googled that.
So Togo, the biography of Togo. This is wild, and I think you'll gather a lot of inspiration from the story for Rocco.
Okay.
Togo, as a puppy, was deemed troublesome.
Okay.
But Sepala recognized that Togo was actually a natural leader over time. Even before he was grown, he was shown to have remarkable athletic ability, outpacing other more trained sled dogs on the reg. He also is noted as being unusually intelligent, saving the lives of more than one musher and dog sled team. like out of nowhere. He had black, like a black, brown, and gray coat that made him look perpetually dirty. So he was not particularly a good looking dog. He was a fucking mud rat, right?
Cute.
Yeah. His name, Togo, is the Sami word for puppy.
Cute puppy.
Because Togo was rather small, maxing out at only 48 pounds, smaller than most huskies at that time.
I feel like huskies are like maybe 55.
Yeah, something like that.
They probably would have more wolf in them back then.
Yeah, and Malamutes were the bigger ones.
Yeah.
So Togo was so rowdy as a puppy that at one point Sipala deemed him untrainable and gave him away at 6 months old.
Oh, yeah, that's Rocco for sure.
Yeah, they thought the behavior was a result of being spoiled since he was born very sick and spent a lot of time being personally nursed by Sipala's wife. They're like, we just despoiled you and now you're the spoiled puppy. You're better as a pet. You're never going to be a sled dog.
That's literally my vet when I first got Rocco and I like had taken him to the vet. He was very sad and like facing in towards me and I was like petting him while he was kind of having a nervous breakdown at the vet. And my vet was like, you're going to ruin him. You're going to teach him that he needs to be nervous all the time because you give him attention then. And I was like, damn, like, can I? It's fine. Fuck.
Togo didn't really last that long as a pet, though.
No, because he's too fucking wild, no. I bet.
Togo jumped through a closed glass window. Just fucking yeeted himself through a glass window.
Rocco would 1,000% do that. 1,000%.
And he went right back to Sipala's kennel.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd be like, fuck no.
Yeah. Impressed by the dog's loyalty, Sipala decided to keep him
on. He ran back by himself?
Yep.
He was like, through the fucking glass. Absolutely not. Just fucking... I'm not fucking staying here.
Yeah.
I want my mom.
Yeah. And Sipala was like, you know what? If you want to be here that badly, I guess you can be trained as a sled dog, whatever. You'll be just
out.
A goobery,
bad
behaving sled dog. Unfortunately, that loyalty was also kind of at the root of some of Togo's behavior issues. When Sipala was out on practice runs, Togo would break out of his kennel and attack the lead dogs of oncoming teams as if he was clearing the way for Sipala's
team.
He's
like, gotta move.
He'd just be like, what, you're gonna run the opposite direction as my man Sipala? You're going down. And he would just like attack them, just tackle them. Right? But then Togo picked the wrong fight.
Yeah.
Attacking a stocky Malamute sled leader. Of course, the bigger dog prevailed and Togo was nearly mauled to death.
Uh-huh.
Togo stopped attacking other lead dogs after that. In fact, it proved a valuable lesson, as one of the more difficult things to teach a lead sled dog is to give a wide berth to other sleds.
Yeah, well, they're aggro, right? They're alpha. And
yeah.
They have to keep everyone in line.
And also, like, imagine, like, when your dog sees another dog and they, like, tug on the leash. Imagine that, but it's, like, eight dogs.
Yeah. And, like, they go wherever the first one goes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
When Togo was 8 months old, he finally became a sled dog.
Okay.
In a weird, unorthodox way.
Okay.
Sipala was hired to quickly transport a man to a gold claim he had made. It was supposed to be a simple round trip, and Sipala didn't want to deal with Togo's fucking insanity. So he tied him up in the kennel. At dusk, Sipala set up camp for the night, and the dogs were, like, curiously keyed up. They were like, something's going on. Sipala was like, what the fuck is, why are the dogs, is it like a bear or something? And Sipala looked in the direction of home, and there was motherfucking Togo running at full speed toward them. And Togo had even injured his paw escaping the kennel.
Oh, baby.
And he had his paw bandaged up. So, like, Sipala was shocked at how fast Togo was running.
He's like, hello, I'm
with
here.
An injured paw, he was running
you
faster than
me.
Most dogs run uninjured. So he was like, what the fuck is this lightning bolt-ass motherfucker running through the snow? He was like, okay, I guess you're coming along the trip then. So Togo would run alongside the sled, but would end up causing tons more problems, pulling the team off track, charging towards reindeer, and trying to play with the dogs that were on the sled that were working. Sipala had no choice but to put a harness on Togo and have him run with the team just to control him. And it turns out that's exactly what Togo needed. He calmed down and became a natural leader. As the run wore on, Sapala kept moving Togo up the line. At the end of the day, he was sharing the lead position with the lead dog named Rusky.
Rusky, I bet, was his name.
Togo had logged 75 miles on his first day in a harness, which is unheard of for an inexperienced young sled dog, especially a puppy. Sapala called him an infant prodigy and later added that I had found a natural born leader, something I had been trying to breed for years. Like,
he just needed responsibility.
Sapala was like the dog sled guy. Like, everybody was like, Sapala breeds the dogs and he knows his shit. If you need to hire a dog sled guy, you call Sapala.
Right? I really think that Rocco would be like Togo and that, like, I would not be able to leave. Like, if he was like, my mom is over there, I will get there. Like, that's pretty much how Rocco is.
Yeah, he, like, homeward bound his way to you no matter where you are. Yeah.
Yeah. He'd be like, who is going to mix my dinner perfectly if my mom isn't there? Who's going to do that?
Now, Togo had done some wild shit, even before the gnome serum run. Here's some of his more impressive feats. During a crossing of the Norton Sound, in a deadly northeast gale, Sapala had ordered Togo to turn, turn to avoid a crack forming in the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately after doing so, Togo abruptly stopped and did a backflip into the rest of the team without being commanded to stop moving. When Sapala arrived at the front of the team to, like, yell at the dog for, like, being weird, he discovered that Togo had bailed not on the trail, but to avoid an open, growing water channel less than 6 feet from the team, which was not visible from the back of the sled. Whoa. Having saved all of them from nearly drowning in the freezing water.
Good boy.
I know. Another impressive feat was during the same trip across the sound. When arriving at the shore of the Bering Sea, the ice floe the team was on top of was too far from land for them to cross or for Sapala to, like, jump over. He hitched Togo in a single lead with an anchor in the ice and tossed him across. He fucking, like, grappling hooked the dog across the ice floe to pull the ice closer to the shore, like the floating ice piece.
Yeah.
And fucking Togo was like, throw me, Papa.
I'm ready.
Toss me. Fucking throws him over this gap, and Togo pulls the team, pulls the ice floe together so the team can cross.
Jesus.
I know, right?
That dog trusts his,
Togo just fucking knew what to do.
Yeah, so much. Like,
yeah, unfortunately, the line snapped, leaving Sapala and the team stranded. Without guidance or prompting, Togo leapt into the water, took the broken line in his mouth, spun around, and wrapped it around himself twice, making a makeshift harness, and pulled the ice floe to shore with his team on it. He fucking, like,
that
wrapped
cannot
it.
Be
That's
real.
That's the story.
That cannot
That's
be real.
That's the story. He fucking was just like, that's okay, I'll just Batman this shit.
He knew. He's ready to lead.
I know. That's something like an animal in a Disney animated movie would do.
Yeah, absolutely not, like, yeah.
By the time the gnome serum run happened, Togo was 12 years old with 7 years of lead dog experience. Togo was in his fucking prime for this run. He was the apex of sled dogs, the Achilles of Alaska, the Hercules of Huskies, the Superman of the sled. And among sled dog circles, he was a motherfucking legend. Okay? He fucking did the rope thing. Like, he was a legend. So,
no, he didn't. It's not true.
So let's talk about the serum run. Balto traveled. How far do you think Balto traveled for the serum run? How many miles?
250.
250? You think Balto did 250?
I think so.
Balto did 55 miles.
Oh, okay. I just was thinking 75 miles on his first run.
Yeah, Balto only did 55.
But I would
the most
say
important run
in
of his life.
Freezing, yeah, freezing temperatures, though, because it was too cold for, like, planes to fly. So those dogs were probably really cold.
How far do you think Sapala and Togo went During the serum run.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Balto did 55.
Okay, Balto did 55.
Yeah.
Togo. I think Togo did 250.
Togo did 260. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I was like, there's no way he did 55 miles.
Dude, Balto did less than Togo did on his first ever
run. On his first run.
Yeah.
Fucking Togo's such a good name, too.
Yeah.
Justice for Togo. Seriously.
And it was not sunny out on their part of the route either. The temperature was 30 below, with gale force winds putting the temperature at a wind chill of 90 below. They also had to travel over exposed open ice on the Norton Sound during a ground blizzard, meaning that the ice beneath them could break into ice floes from the instability at any moment. The blizzard was a complete whiteout, and Sepala couldn't see the route or navigate at all. He just trusted Togo, and the dog pulled through, bringing them to a roadhouse, avoiding certain death. The team slept for 6 hours before continuing. After that, the temperature had dropped another 10 degrees, and the winds were still fierce. Not only did they have to cross this fucking, ice trap, but they had to climb a fucking mountain. They climbed 5,000 feet and then descended. After the mountain, Sepala passed the serum to musher Charlie Olson, who then passed it to Kasson and Balto to finish out the last run of the race. Balto crossed the finish line and was just there for pictures. But Togo.
But it was Togo.
Togo was the real goat.
That's a long way. 250 miles?
Yeah, 260.
And just resting for 6 hours?
In blizzard. Blizzard conditions in Alaska.
That dog 90 below. Is a beast.
Yeah.
Mentally just has, the only thing he can do is be near his dad and run. That's it. That's the only thing he knows. Be near dad, run.
Yeah, and also sailor's knots.
apparently. there's some fucking seal. It's like, you literally just Googled that.
You literally just Googled
how to do that, okay?
I mean, you think about it. He just fucking grabs the rope, and then he corkscrews himself and turns himself into a winch in the water.
I'm trying to think, because you could see him, sometimes they pull it from behind for, better gripping. I don't know, dogs, because they do dogs with tugging and stuff, and they train them. Maybe he trained him how to do that.
Corkscrew.
Well, how many times do their lines break? Probably often, in a often ish,
mm-hmm.
at least once a year, right? Probably, guess depending. You would think that probably he did some sort of training with the lead dog on what to do if the lines break.
Yeah, but Togo jumped into the water unprompted.
No, I'm sure, but I'm just saying maybe he was trained on what to do with the broken lines and how to pull them forward. And then he was like, I have to go get the line, and he jumped in the water and then pulled it. And so he might have already known how to do that.
Now you're the skeptic. You're the skeptic.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds so fucking fake. I'm sure he was a great dog, but he did not jump in the water and twist around.
Anyway, Togo did not jump in the water and twist around for you to not get vaccinated. Togo went through so much. Go get vaccinated.
Togo only knew run and be near dad, and he did that so people would get vaccinated, so you should too.
In 1929, Togo was 16 years old and suffering from severe joint pain and partial blindness.
Mm-hmm.
He could barely move and was in constant pain and would keep hurting himself to be part of the sled dog team. He was moved to a doggy retirement home, which was basically a resort. Also, he had all the bitches he could ever want because everybody wanted to breed Togo.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, how much to let your dog put his penis in my dog?
Probably a lot for studying, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. It was a deal. Until Togo's condition deteriorated, Sepala painlessly euthanized him, saying in a later interview, "I never had a better dog than Togo. His stamina, loyalty, and intelligence could not be improved upon. Togo was the best dog that ever traveled the Alaska Trail. And probably is the best that ever will."
TBH,
this is some crazy shit.
What a good boy.
The offspring of Togo would be called the Sepala Siberian Dog Sled Breed. Literally, Togo fucking made his own breed. He was such a legend.
So wild. Yeah, that's awesome.
After his death, Sapala had him custom mounted. And the mounted skin was on display at the Shelburne Museum in Shelburne, Vermont. Alaskan students started a letter campaign to return Togo to Alaska. It's like, he's ours. Give him back.
Yeah.
Today, the mounted skin is on display in a glass case at the Iditarod Trail sled dog race headquarters museum in Wasilia, Alaska. And at the Peabody Museum of Natural History at Yale University, his skeleton is in their collection.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Togo's reputation earned him enduring fame, really. Like, not as much as Balto, just because of the TV show and, like, the newspapers
yeah.
and everything. But, like, among dog sled circles, oh, yeah. Togo's a legend.
Legend, yeah.
Yeah. But only in 1997 did he get his statue. Like, he didn't really get his flowers until 1997, sitting alongside Balto's statue at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. In 2001, he finally got an individual statue, but of, like, a minor size initially in New York City's, like, Lower East Side, and they later moved him to Seward Park. The popular fictional teen sleuth Nancy Drew... Her terrier is named after Togo because the writer knew of Togo.
Wow. That's
yeah.
cool.
Togo might not have been magic, but certainly remarkable.
Yeah. As close as it gets, I feel like.
I know. Especially you consider, like, the killer intuition, navigating the routes that left both, like, fellow sled dogs and humans just, like, dumbfounded. Like, miracle abilities.
Yeah.
But what do you think, Elle? Was Togo a magic dog?
Yeah. If he knew how to corkscrew in the water, yeah. I mean, I definitely feel like there are some people and animals that are just made to do things, that are just like, he just was meant to be the ultimate sled dog, I feel like. That's kind of magical.
Yeah. You
know, I like it.
Yeah.
I bet.
I think that's a little bit of why, like, canomancy isn't as much of a thing, right? Because... it's so much less of a mystery. Like, all of this is remarkable, but it's within the realm of possibility. It's
yeah.
your hope for something realized. And so it doesn't have to be magic when it's real.
Yeah.
And with that, let's go get your hell beast mounted up.
We got to get him strapped into his harness.
And take him to the isolated outdoor location. Fortunately, we live in Utah and there's plenty of wilderness so that we can drop him in. We're going to cut to that. And you can attempt some traditional canomancy, observing his mannerisms at a location in order to perform a reading. Perhaps a little like Sigmund Freud used his dog to read his clients. Perhaps you can use your dog to read yours. So we're taking Rocco to fairly sacred place. It was rather sacred, I would say.
Yeah.
Called Yosepa. And I know there's not going to be anybody there this time of year. Yosepa is a ghost town, maybe an hour from Salt Lake. And if you visit there, like, normally I don't tell people about this, but if you visit there, make sure that you donate to the turtle. It's like a turtle that you can put cash in. Make sure that you donate so that they can maintain this grounds. Visitors are, of course, welcome. And on their website, it says that anybody is welcome to come visit. But it's located officially in Skull Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Yosepa is the Hawaiian word for Joseph. Mormon missionaries were sent to Lake Polynesia and Hawaii in the 1850s and converted just a whole bunch of islanders, particularly in Hawaii at that time. The Hawaiian government began to allow emigration to the United States, and also there was a big faith crisis due to, like, colonization in Hawaii. It made them really quick converts, especially with something like the LDS faith, which is very focused on family, and islander culture is also very focused on family. It made
mm-hmm.
sense, especially when they preach the doctrine of eternally sealing your family in the temple. In
yeah.
Mormonism, if you go to the temple, you can be sealed to your family for all eternity and spend eternity with them in heaven. Of course, that really appealed to them. But they were like, in order to do that, though, you got to come to Salt Lake, where our temple is. So there was this mass immigration of islanders to Salt Lake. Problem, racism.
Yeah.
America is a racist place. And they were treated very badly by the white people here. And it's just, imagine the same people who sold you on leaving your home behind and going to this new place, hating you for doing exactly what you asked them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nuts. Absolutely nuts. But racism is not a sane thing. So after all of this, they were like, listen, it's real oppressive here. And the church was like, okay, we'll give you your own special land to essentially segregate them. This
yeah,
will be like islander.
Well, separate but equal.
Yeah, yeah, islander town. That's all yours. We'll just give you this land in a very lovely, beautiful place called, what's it called again? Skull Valley. We'll give you a place in Skull Valley.
Definitely really good agriculture there.
Yeah, no. Salt deposits from the Great Salt Lake near Skull Valley make it almost impossible to grow anything.
Anything at all.
Reasonable. But there was mining. So these islanders did the best with what they had, and they were fairly successful at mining. They did a great job of building their town, but this was not the environmental conditions that they were used to. So they ended up getting diseases and dying. And the worst part was, while they were producing a lot from mining, nobody would trade with them because of racism. Because you can't just escape racism through segregation. That's not how it works. It's a systemic issue that affects every system you want to be involved with. Finally, the church was like, you know what? We will pay for you to go back to Hawaii. We'll build a temple in Hawaii and we'll pay for you to go back to Hawaii. And so this town was more or less abandoned. And all that's there is a cemetery and some like a pavilion, because they have a Islander Pioneer Day basically every year where people who are Islander Mormons go out and celebrate their ancestors coming here and explore their culture without judgment away from city, just so that they can have a space that's for them. You can still go and visit at any time, but again, try to donate money so that they can maintain these grounds if you're going to go. There's going to be nobody there today because it's November and it's cold.
It's going to be cold as fuck,
and
yeah,
a little wet, but we're going to take Rocco there because it's also – beautiful and in the middle of nowhere. So let's go. We are at Yosepa in Skull Valley doing a canomancy reading. It's pitch dark out here, but this is why we come here, to see the stars, because there's nothing out here. It's the middle of nowhere. Well, I guess it's Yosepa. It is somewhere. It's a very important place, but it's very private. There's nobody out here, which means that nobody to bother El's hell beast. From hell.
He's very happy. He's having a good time.
So Elle is just going to observe Rocco's mannerisms. Elle, did Jen text you back with the divination question?
Yes.
Oh, talking to the laptop.
Yes, she did. She is one of our patrons. And sorry, I'm cold. I'm shivering. she's one of our patrons, and she wanted to know about anything that she can do with her business and or anything she can know to improve her health. So I'm just going to kind of observe Rocco and see what he's doing and see which question I can kind of answer.
Okay. Rocco, what do you think? Sniff. Snort. So we're just following him around the border of the cemetery. That's the main thing that's here at Yosepa, is the cemetery. One thing I really love is the tetherball poles.
Yeah.
Because that seems like so much fun. I used to love tetherball in, you know, elementary school.
We're going for like a walk.
There's also actually plumbing here. There are restrooms with plumbing and fresh water. One of the things that made Yosepa notable as a town in its time, in like the late 18, early 1900s, was that they had come up with a genius plumbing system. to get water into Skull Valley. And the church helped, but mostly it was the islanders who put this all together. And there's like a fire hydrant in the cemetery that really is a monument to how advanced this ghost town was. Going around the bathroom, what does it mean, Elle? That there's green grass. We're looking for the green grass. Sniffing.
Looking.
Sniffing everything.
I'm cold.
Oh, he's
no,
peeing.
Not his, yeah.
He's giving a little wee. Another thing was, on the drive out here, we saw a bobcat, a wildcat. It's been raining, so I'm guessing the wildcat was getting all the mice and rodents flushed from their holes. What was that? Yeah, that was cows. There's a ranch nearby. Yeah, you can hear the cows, I guess. Which is very spooky out here alone in the pitch dark. In this ghost town. The other thing we saw right when we pulled into Yosepa was a great horned owl. A pretty rare animal in Utah, but present here nonetheless.
You literally just Googled that.
I literally just Googled that.
I literally don't know this song.
Those cows are really loud.
Yeah. I think they're not far away.
Oh, that was a loud cow. In the pavilion, what do we find on the stage?
We're looking at the stage.
So there's a card table.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
Do we need to go look?
Another bird?
Nope.
What is it?
Raccoon, probably.
A raccoon! Man, so much wildlife.
Well, there's nothing out here.
Yeah. Suppose that's true. This is their home, not ours.
Yeah. Good spot for some theromancy, though, right?
Yeah, good spot for theromancy. Also, good spot for astronomy and astrology because the stars are very, very clear out
here.
Yeah, when we come to, when there's like astrological events, we usually come out here to view them.
And there's no one else here. That's yeah. Secret spot.
So, these cows are getting harassed.
Probably by that fucking owl.
By the owl? You think the great horned owl's going after cows?
I don't know. Hey, what do you think, little one?
Have we investigated? No, there's still so much more. What is it?
What's it, boy?
What do you smell? Man flesh.
Sin.
Yeah, oh, there's also basketball hoops in this pavilion. So, tetherball and hoops. I'm sure you can hear the change in audio inside the pavilion. It's got a tin roof, so it reflects sound.
We're really just on an adventure letting Rob go.
Yeah, he's leading. Ma! These cows.
That's beautiful.
What would cow magic be? Bovamancy?
Probably. Cow magic is actually a thing. Cows are very maternal.
And like Hathor.
And like used, yes. Like cow medicine has a lot to do with taking the time that it needs to get things done, as well as motherhood and nurturing. So at the pavilion, they have like some stairs set up so you can look out over the cemetery, which is very cool. Oh my God, this dog.
The cows, I think, are having an argument.
I think they're getting closer.
Because they're like responding to each other. Maybe they see the light.
Hey, Rob, what do you
It's very calm, very confident.
Yes, this is a very calm, like, reverent sort of spot. It's not, like, a lot of ghost towns feel haunted. It doesn't feel haunted out here.
You know, I was listening to You're Wrong About, which is a podcast that I like, and they did an episode on Ed and Lorraine Warren, and the guest that they had posited that when we as in, like, modern... Oh, we're going to throw up.
What does that mean?
I mean, nothing happened.
Come on, Kanomancer, what does that mean? What does that pretend for Jen's business?
Well, nothing happened. But they were saying, or positing, that we look at haunted as a way to call things sacred. That now, like, we don't really have words for that. But when we call a place haunted because people have died there, it's sacred. Mm. Because that's where they are, so. I don't know, I've been thinking about that.
As in, like, the church cornered the market on sacred and hallowed, and things that are sacred and hallowed by their own nature had to find new language, and that language is haunted.
Yep. I'm not really sure why he gagged. That was weird.
We'll just get some water drips.
Nope. Please don't go in the wet grass.
Yeah, we gotta get you home, Rocco. You don't want to get everything wet.
No. I think we're, like, wrapping up, really. I'm sure he could stay here and smell things.
Oh, probably he could stay here all night, yeah.
I don't think we need to inspect that.
No, we don't need to inspect the shower closet. Oh, missing. Endangered person. Have you seen Rick Morris? Rick has been missing since 1:55 a.m. on June 25th, 2021. Last seen in Tooele. 32 years old.
Yeah, are you ready to go now?
All right, you want to go back to the car and then you'll give your assessment in the car?
Yeah, I think so. I think Rocco's ready.
All right, Elle, based on Rocco's behavior, what should Jen do about her business?
You know, I think actually being really confident and being comfortable with stepping back into the light, or, like, getting back on stage, getting comfortable with kind of getting back out there, I feel like is a really important thing. And it's mostly I'm getting, like, about classes and about being in front of people. And I think that that's something that you're kind of missing. I get that that's something that you're kind of feeling disconnected from, but you're not sure why or what the thing is. But it's like, go confidently even into new spaces, because you already know what is expected from you and what's needed from you to be successful, even if you don't know the exact format, because Rocco was very confident and had, like, a good time.
Are we just going to ignore all the dry heaving that he did? Just like, bleh.
You know, sometimes dogs do that. I don't know what it was from. It's not like he ate anything.
He had some CBD treats. I wonder if he's just too stoned.
I don't think he's too stoned. I think he just, sometimes you get a little gaggy.
I mean, I know that.
I'm a chronic migraine sufferer, and I have a standing Zofran prescription. Sometimes you get a little gaggy. It's okay.
Yeah, you think it was just the long car ride?
It could have been the long car ride, and yeah. Just kind of wandering through. He had a good time. He was a good Kanomancer. I think we should we look at the other animals and see what they could portend as well?
Yeah, let's take a look at the other animals that we spotted. It was a bobcat and a great horned owl. All right, so Elle has looked up the animal symbolism regarding bobcats. I looked up which species of cats are wild to Utah. This was absolutely a wild cat, and it is the American bobcat is in Utah. But, you know, the wild cat species are pretty elusive, so it's rare to find one. Same with the great horned owl. It's native to Utah, but it's pretty rare to find one.
So the great horned owl doesn't necessarily have super specific animal medicine is what we look at, which is like utilizing different characteristics from those animals and then taking them as messages and or applying those characteristics to our life to help us, which is how we stop culturally appropriating spirit animals. So one of the things that differentiates with a great horned owl is that, like, the owl doesn't actually have horns. They're just feathers. And it's, like, this connection to God or source is the big thing. But then owls indicate that you may need to remove yourself from the noise of life. Take a moment to become meditative and silently observe your surrounding. Moreover, slowing down and becoming stable will allow you to access the wealth of information. And that is like a thing that I'm doing in my life right now. And then bobcat is super similar. If the bobcat enters your life, you're probably entering a time of making all manner of plans that require serious coordination. Bobcat knows how to hunt down what he most wants, but recognizes that it requires a certain skill set and good deal of fortitude. Another reason for bobcat's appearance is when we have overextended ourselves. The world is hectic and busy, which leaves many of us burning the candle on both ends. Bobcat counsels slowing down and giving yourself more recreational time. And then also about being alone. And both of the animals are about being alone and taking time. So this has been, and they're both, bobcat and owl are both associated with nighttime, which is like death happening as well. So I don't think that those were for Jennifer, but I do think that they were messages for moi.
Oh. Well, it looks like we got some bonus theriomancy with our canomancy. We got like a special side. It's like cheese sticks to go with the pizza of canomancy.
Do you have anything to add, Rocco? Is there any last words you'd like to say?
No, utter silence.
I don't think so.
All right. We're going to head back.
Hit us up on Patreon and Elle will do a reading for you on the show using whatever divination method we're covering. Patreon.com/Mancy. Also, if you like the show, please share with your friends. The more support we have, the more episodes we can make. If you like my writing, you can pick up books at rjwalkerpoet.com. Also, a charity play I wrote will be live streaming on December 15th and 16th. Mark your calendars. It'll be at 8 p.m. You can find details at utaharts.org/alliance-theater, and you can find the Alliance Theater on Twitch, where you can watch and donate to the homeless shelter as the play goes on. It's a rowdy good time. 18 plus.
Yeah. If you want to get a reading from me, you can maybe probably do that at some point in the future. So definitely shoot me an email. I just have weird health stuff that is like totally unresolved at this point.
Oh. But like, I mean, who knows when they're going to listen to this? Might as well drop your stuff.
Yeah. So you can shoot me an email at laurelsoflex@gmail.com. My website is laurelsoflex.com. You can also find me on Etsy at laurelsoflex. Any of those places you can like shoot me a message. If I'm not available for readings right at that moment, you can message me and we can set something up.
The music was provided by, in order of appearance, Hayden Folker, Arthi Vinka, Miyu, and Scott Buckley. And I literally just Googled that.